Fans, we are back live with another edition of the Cheap Heat Productions Wrestling Podcast. My name is Jack Kilby, Executive Vice President of Great North Wrestling. Really pleased tonight to welcome a man who is an Eastern Championship Wrestling ECW original, a very well-known competitor in the Philly area, and he was actually the first ever ECW TV champion, along with holding the Eastern Championship Wrestling title. I'm, of course, talking about the one and only Johnny Hotbody. Before we get into our discussion with Johnny tonight, I, as per custom here, must throw to Mr. Cheap Heat himself, all the way over in Ireland. That would be Morris Shorthall. Morris, how are you?
Very good, Jack, and thank you, and very special thanks to Johnny for coming on today. And we had a little brief discussion there while I came in, right on cue, and I can see there's comments there already for you, Johnny.
Wow. Well, thank you. Thank everyone for giving their time to watch this, and I'm ready to talk wrestling, and that's real wrestling as far as I'm concerned, not the product we have today.
Oh, we know.
Amen to that. Johnny, I think the fans, when we do in-depth career interviews, like a good starting point is to ask you a two-point question, or a part A and a part B question. One being, were you a fan of the business growing up? And if so, what territories slash companies did you follow?
Yes, I was a fan, and I went to shows when I was younger, as young as 8, 9 years old, in Atlantic City, New Jersey, at the convention center with my grandfather. Lo and behold, I'm 61 years old. I'm living in Atlantic City, down the street from the convention center. And at that time, and until the time the NWA moved into this territory, there was, for me, only the WWF and superstar Billy Graham.
And they inspired you to take that step. Was there a moment when you decided, you know what, I'm going to pursue wrestling as a career? How did that process work for you?
When I was younger, going to these matches, and I was at the WWF, and I believe it was Greg the Hammer Valentine was wrestling Pedro Morales, and there was a riot in the arena, the convention center. And from that moment on, I knew I wanted to be involved. It was great. It was something that as a kid I thought was 100% real, like all of us. And growing up, getting involved in the business, I learned the business was real, not the wrestling.
Can you talk about your process, your training process? I understand you were trained under Larry Sharp at the famous Monster Factory, and how that set you up for the career that you did have.
Yes, true. The Monster Factory, Larry Sharp. I trained with the Pitbulls, Chris Chavez, who later turned into Tatanka, Charlie White, who was Papa Shango, who was the Godfather, Big Joe Daniels, Bam Bam Bigelow. I learned with those guys, and there's a lot of guys, probably Chris Evans, Dennis Allen, JT Smith. I paid my dues by going through that schooling. Larry would run shows to guarantee you that you would get your money's worth. He would guarantee you were going to work in the business. He would run WWA cards, and then hooked up with Dennis Carluzzo, and they were New Jersey NWA / WWA cards. I was a champion there. was, I believe, junior heavyweight title, and then went on to an NWA title, Jersey title. That's pretty much it.
I think at this time, Morris is going to, just for the sake of chronology, talk about your work early on with the WWF. Morris?
Okay.
Yeah, so Johnny, I seen you join the WWF in 1989. So how did that process come about, from training to kind of getting to the biggest wrestling company in the world, you'd say?
Well, when Larry thought we were ready, he had a connection to the WWF talent line. I'm not sure exactly who it was at that time that was working in the office. It may have been Tony Garea or Terry Garvin. I'm not positive of the Terry Garvin being there at that time. But we would get set up there, me and a whole group of guys. We get set up there to do jobs for various, you know, top talent. I got to work with a lot of great guys. Yeah.
And what was it like kind of going into a dressing room like that? Because I'm assuming that you would have seen these guys on TV. Was it intimidating in any way, or was it just something that you could put out of the back of your mind?
Overwhelming, but you're supposed to be a professional. We're taught to be a professional. And I went there representing Dennis Caraluzzo and Larry, and was told to keep my mouth shut. Don't speak till anyone speaks to you. Don't make an asshole out of yourself in that locker room, because the last thing you want to do is draw attention from Pat Patterson. Yep. Okay, you guys could laugh at some point, but that wasn't a rib. That was for real. That was for real. That's a, you know, pretty much what was told. Just stay away. And, you know, you just go there, you go in that locker room, seeing Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, Rick Rude, all those stars at that time. Amazing. And I was a fan of all those guys. But like I said, having to put that behind you, it's kind of rough. And then having to work with them as a green, you know, you never know what to expect. I was at that time fortunate to be on Channel 3 World News, Person of the Week or whatever it was, with Tom Brokaw. I was doing Rolling Stone magazine interview, and also MTV. And, you know, Haku had seen it, King Haku. And, you know, like he told me all the boys had seen it and, you know, was mad respect what they had seen. I had Nature Boy Buddy Rogers in my living room wrestling my son, who was 10 years old. I had Buddy Landell, Nature Boy Buddy Landell, in my living room. Kerry Von Erich, Joel Goodhart made all this possible, of course, you know. So, you know, I'm 30 years old at that time, and, you know, I'm 30 years old, but my mindset is I'm like a 10-year-old kid. You know, and that's pretty much how I felt at that time. Love for the business.
Yeah, we hear a lot of times, and I see you had an IC title match at one point there with the Ultimate Warrior. We hear like we hear the good and the bad about that man. What was your experience like working with him?
Jimmy was good to me. He said to me, "Listen, EG, for real." He says, "Listen, you know, people tell you I'm stiff. You know, you were right with that." And I says, "Listen, I'm cool with anything you want to give me." And the worst thing that happened was he hit me with a clothesline across the bridge of my nose and my mouth. I seen stars. I took that bump. Yeah, you seen the match. I never seen myself. I never watched any of it. But I do remember being the Gorilla Pressed and having the Intercontinental title on my back imprinted for 2 days, black and blue on me. Yeah, But it was, you know, it was great. It was fun. It was 10 minutes of greatness to me. So I don't have a bad word against the man. None at all.
One of the other opponents that that you worked in WWF syndicated television, and we'll get into some of the who's who of tag team matches that you had there, but you touched on working the man who is reputed to be the toughest man in at least the modern era of professional wrestling, and that's King Tonga Haku. How did that I remember seeing that match at the time. And was quite impressed. How did that one go for you?
It was great. I met with him, you know, and he said he was going to give me a few spots, and I lost track of where I was, excited at the time, you know, you get lost. But he covered for me. That's the professional he was, and he didn't abuse me. Didn't, you know, he finished me with a kick. I ran into, I believe it was his sidekick, and it stopped right in front of me. I felt the wind, and I just took the bump. He was a gentleman. I love him. I think he's great. You know, a lot of these guys I worked with, you know, I don't want to mark out, but they were great. Even if you're going to bring up the Powers of Pain, you know, the Barbarian and Warlord. Warlord, as big as he is, he's one of the nicest men I ever had the pleasure to have any discussion with as far as being in a position that he was. He treated me equally, you know. Same with all of them, though, but with Warlord, it was just, you know, laughing and eating chicken and, yeah, he could eat 32 chicken breasts to his, what? Sitting. Crazy.
That's required for that muscle mass, that high protein diet. Well, again, we'll circle back to some more of your WWF opponents, but I wanted to get into the meat of your career, starting with a man that you just touched on that I recently interviewed for a long discussion, and that was Joel Goodhart behind the Tri-State Wrestling Alliance. You were a staple of that company, and we'll get into some of those details too. But can you tell us how you first started to work for Joel?
Wrestling radio, call in, started a feud between Tony Stetson and I, build up to being on his card with a bunch of all the names on one of his super cards, and got to work with Tony Stetson in, you know, that was an experience in its own. But Joel, the mind on that man for the wrestling business, incredible. It's just a shame that he got taken for a lot of money to pay guys that I believe would have worked for pennies on the dollar. They were all starving, had no jobs, had nowhere to go. I mean, you know, you fly a guy in, you put him up, and you pay him. Man, they are my brethren in the business at one point, but I believe they all took advantage of Joel. I know that he was a fan more than anything, and I just wish that, you know, Larry or someone could have stopped him from spending the money and blowing it the way he did. It's just a shame that it happened the way it did. Yeah. I'm sorry I got lost on the question, because Joel's such an important part of my life, and I got so much love for that man. And I, you know, as one of the guys in the locker room, I just couldn't believe that it was happening like that. You know, money.
And Joel talked about how his vision of a promotion was to have have the individuals, the stars from other territories flown in, blah, blah, blah. But he said he could build a company based on a core group of Philly guys, of which you were one. One of your perhaps most memorable programs in TWA and elsewhere was another gentleman that we had an opportunity to interview, and that was Hitman Tony Stetson, and all those matches that you had with him. There's some historians that recall or look at those matches that you had, including the barbed wire ones, the very physical matches, as not inventing, but bringing modern hardcore wrestling to the forefront. Can you talk about your program, at least for this moment in TWA, with Tony, be it that barbed wire match or that hair versus hair deal?
Tony and I needed to prove ourselves and wanted to make it in the business. Neither one of us had the height, and no one was looking at guys that were, you know, no one was looking at us as 6'6", 6'8" guys that were going to get a push. You know, for guys like 6 foot under, you get the treatment of the Pat Patterson room, if you want to. Joke. That was a joke. But so Tony and I just went out there and wanted to work hard, give the people what they wanted to see, and prove ourselves as worthy as the stars that were on there. You know, looking for their acceptance would help us catapult us to make money off of the business and hopefully get that same rub. Unfortunately, it didn't work that way. But Tony and I did nothing special. I don't believe this is me. You know, Tony may feel otherwise. Tony led me. I was Ginger Rogers. He was Fred Astaire. I just was taking bumps and doing everything that, you know, felt natural to do. And as far as the fighting went, when the physicality came, we just beat the shit out of each other. We didn't care. We knew what we were going to do. And we knew how much we had a love for each other, regardless of what the other. We had people snowballed that they thought we hated each other. Him and I, Tony taught me. Tony trained me. My first experience to the Monster Factory was Tony picking me up with white hair and a black beard, sitting real low in this bomb of a car. We're lucky we even made it to Larry's school. And seriously, you know, we hit the ropes. We did everything. He taught me how to take those bumps. And, you know, that's something people had no idea even took place. That's how kayfabe we kept it. And in the locker room, the boys, you know, I wasn't liked, because the boys would tell Tony, kick that asshole's ass. You know, I had a problem. I don't know what the problem was. I didn't know what the problem was at that time. I had an ego. I thought I was somebody, and I wasn't anybody. I really was, and I was nobody better than any of the other guys. But being given a title, and everybody pumps your ego to your face, but behind your back, you get the, you know, whatever. But, you know, seriously, everybody wanted Tony to kick my ass, and Tony would go, yeah, 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 yeah. And he would say, yo, John, you believe this one, that one, this one. Hey, whatever. Let's go out there and have fun. I don't care what people say, man. I never did. I don't care what anyone thinks about me. Whatever you want to know, I tell you, whatever, man. No secrets. But yeah, Tony and I.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up the fact that, because Joel actually talked about that as well, is how you and Tony had basically the greater Philly area convinced that this was a legitimate, absolute hatred, which of course made your matches all that more enjoyable. Is that something that like a lot of longtime fans you think is really missing, like an attempt at kayfabe and getting that emotional reaction from the fans in the stands?
That's been missing from the business since Paulie invaded ECW. Yeah, seriously. They turned the hardcore into an entertainment thing and took away the realism and opened up to business to guys taking bumps through glass. Oh, come on, man. It's unreal what's going on, and I don't know. I'm glad 30 years have passed, and I've been out of the business because I couldn't sell my soul the way these guys are. I'm sorry. Not that I'm better than them, but I don't need anybody. I don't need that ego, man. I don't have anything to sell. I have no books. I have nothing. I don't even know how to work the internet. And don't care to. My girl has to help me. She's 39 years old. I'm 61, and I don't mess with this stuff. If it wasn't for her, you wouldn't get me.
Yeah, well, you made it anyway. What do you think it is, Johnny? Do you think it's what you said there, that fans still resonate over TWA? Do you think it's that realism that the promotion brought?
Yeah, you seen TWA deteriorate to Extreme Championship Wrestling. I was the transition heavyweight champion, or whatever you want to call that, from Tri-State Wrestling to Jimmy Snuka had it the day before. It was Tri-State. I took the title. It was Tri-State. The next night, it was turned into ECW. I had said something like I was too extreme for regular wrestling. I cut some promo. I had woman behind me, Bulldog Brower, DC Drake. I used to go on like now. I just whatever, man. But I was the one that said I was too extreme, and then it went from Eastern Championship Wrestling to Extreme Championship Wrestling. And that's the real history of it. Although they erased me from it three times. I'm a Triple Crown champion, but ECW won't tell you that. You know, they'll tell you either Shane Douglas or Hack is the first champion, and tag team champions, and my name don't come up. Yeah, now that, you know, 30, it doesn't matter anymore, but it's funny how the business is able to erase someone that quick.
Well, there are still a lot of fans that do care about the historical record, and that's part of our mission here on Cheap Heat, is to preserve that historical record and talk to figures such as yourself that are significant in terms of territories and the business as a whole. You mentioned TWA folded, transition to Eastern Championship Wrestling. Can you talk about your relationship with Todd Gordon and working under the auspices, at least initially, of the Booker Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert?
All right. Well, when I had met Todd, Todd was a silent money for Joel as far as advertisement. None of the boys were supposed to know that. But I became friends with Todd, and I knew a lot more than anyone else. I used to spend time with Todd. Todd used to talk to me like I was, you know, the best thing in his life. We were friends, man. We were seriously what I thought were friends. The business that he's running is failing because he doesn't want the hardcore no more. He wants to bring in Chief J. Strongbow and whatever names it were, the old guys, and his product sucked. He didn't want me and Tony doing anything that was significant at that time. You see, there was a lull when me and Tony were building a territory, helping build a territory. I didn't build, I was helping. Okay, had nothing to do with me personally, 100% me. But anyway, So we're all working our asses off. Todd comes in. He doesn't want that. He's got the Variety Club telethon. But then he's got me clotheslining him in a wheelchair, ripping up a check for the kids. This is the mentality. And he's loving it. And he's popping because we're getting written up by Bob Smith and all the Bill Attner, and all the pictures are being taken. And Todd's slowly morphing into the ring announcer to trying to be one of the boys. And now here's the chance. Here's the chance. I seen it and I never knew it. It took me 30 years to compile everything and a couple of concussions. He waited, I believe. This is me. I believe Todd waited for the opportunity to strike for what Joel had built and try to make more profit, be one of the boys. He was laughing, yucking it up, entertaining everyone, holding parties, you know, whatever it took. And then, you know, a guy that I trained and built Sandman, he's becoming more of a buddy to Todd. Todd and I are starting to drift apart. Now Todd's the owner, and all of a sudden, like, Todd's losing. Something's wrong with Todd. I knew what it was. There was another guy behind the scenes starting to feed Todd painkillers and drugs. You know, this is me telling you what I know. He could say whatever he wants. Deny, deny, deny. He's a piece of shit. He abuses people, writes it in the book, and he's God. He's a piece of shit. Okay. But let me get back to this. So he's losing control in his fan-based stardom. He gets Eddie Gilbert. I don't know who in their right mind told him to give the reins to this dude who's on pills. He's heavily on painkillers. The kid is being bumped out of territories on his own failures, you know, his own demons, and you want to give him run of a promotion. So you see here the devil's working with Todd now, and he's got guys that want to be a star, sucking his ass, making him believe he's a star, feeding him drugs. He owns the organization. He's still losing it. His money source was his dad. His dad cut him off. He owned the Carver Reed, not Todd. Todd didn't own shit. He was working for his dad. He was 30-something years old working for his dad, but everybody was snowballed. You know, everybody wants the truth. Here's the truth from Johnny Hotbody, who seen it, lived it, and watched it happen, and watched it. I watched Babylon burn, and I backed up. You know, Eddie Gilbert, come on, man. Eddie don't know what day it is. If somebody's banging his wife in the locker room, Missy, you know, come on, man. This dude knows what day of the week it is. But anyway, no names. Todd can't get no money no more. He can't get no money no more. What's he got? He's got Paulie, the snake of the snakes. What a beat, another piece of shit. Okay. He helped the demise of Chris Candido. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'll say it until I die. All right. But anyway, that's another story. So anyway, you got him losing money because he isn't losing money because of the business. He's losing money because of the drugs, and he's getting cut off, and he isn't getting any money no more. He sells to Paulie 51% of the company. Paulie's got ideas. Paulie, as far as the business goes, he's got a mind for the business. He sees talent. He sees assholes and he knows how to wipe them, and then he makes them shine. Okay. Because he'll kiss the ass of guys that are sick. You know, I came nose to nose with him in the back. Ron Simmons and Cactus Jack pulled me away and they said, there's another time, Johnny, there's another time. I blew up and I walked out of that company. I wasn't fired. I walked. What else you got for me? I'm sorry if I went the wrong way on that.
Oh, no.
I have so much on my chest about them assholes.
Nope. Passionate.
No, no, no. Was just going to ask you, since you brought him up, and I think I know what the answer is, but the past week, the wrestling world has been a buzz with accolades for Mr. Heyman and his introduction to the WWE Hall of Fame. I take it you're not a fan of that that particular selection.
You know, Tony and I built that area. That was my arena. It's my cousin's arena, my cousin Butchie. My cousin Butchie gave them that arena, okay, to Todd. They had nowhere to wrestle. Cabrini College was their last and only place. They weren't going to be afforded to wrestle at McGonagall Hall, whatever the reasons were. I guess Bob Ortiz and Lex wouldn't give up any more money because they were tired of losing money and being investors, seeing a bunch of cokeheads and pill poppers be superstars, and you're invested in this. I could see why like people like that, you know. But then again, I hear, and I don't notice, but supposedly Bob is still friends with that piece of shit, Todd. But your question about Paulie, as far as the business goes, he knows who to give the reach around to. You know what a reach around is when you got your ass, your mouth on an ass, and your hand around giving the old jerk and tug. That's Paulie. That's Paul.
Is that not traditionally called the Pat Patterson go behind and reach around?
Well, Pat Patterson had another way. It was the butterfly spread. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, I'm going to tell you something. You got a lot of guys on here. Okay. Okay. You know what? They probably could kick my ass. I have triple bypass surgery. If you feel like beating my ass, ha, 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 you beat an old man up. But check this out. You got a lot of guys on here, and they're so-called tough guys. A lot of them. They all laid down with Pat, or they wouldn't be where they are. Deny, deny, deny. You could deny. But listen, it's there. It's just there, man. You know, a lot of them guys aren't telling the truth, man. And a lot of them knew what was going on. They didn't care. They were as guilty as whoever was doing it. Seriously, they all were. You know, you speak out, you don't work. Guess who never worked in 30 years? Could you guess? Yes, you're in Ireland. Could you guess?
Yep.
You know who never worked another day in his life for speaking out to Paulie? Do you know, Jack? You're looking at him.
Yes, sir.
That's right. I'm the only one that I know of that told him to go fuck himself. I don't need this. I don't lay down for no one. Listen, man, I ain't doing jobs for Taz, that fucking idiot, self-made tough guy. I'm not doing jobs for fucking none of them bozos that he brought in. Okay. There's a lot of guys I like in the ECW. There's a lot of guys that respect in ECW, but there's a lot of guys that were office before there was an office. Yeah. You know, when I went to Paulie, you know who stood on his side?
Tommy
was hiding. Tommy's a dreamer. You know, Sammy, he's standing there with his fucking kendo stick. Yeah. You know who gave that man his start? It may have been Joel, but I'm the one that tagged with him and his wife Peaches. I'm the one that hung out with him. I'm the one that, you know, became friends with Jimmy. I don't know what happened to him. I don't know what happened to him. Listen, I love Jimmy. I don't know who Sandman is.
Just Johnny, you mentioned obviously Pat Patterson there, and like everybody knows kind of what was going on in the Fed at that time. Do you reckon, in light of all these WWF scandals that are coming out these days, mostly resolving around Vince McMahon, do you think that there's plenty more to come from that era of guys maybe trying to tell their story of what happened.
Yeah, but too bad a lot of the guys that were doing it are dead and can't be held accountable. What good is it to with Tommy Cole, you know, the ring boy?
Tom Cole, yes.
Yeah. What good does it do him? What good does it do him that everyone knows now? Everybody knew then. And now you want to glorify that man. Let the man rest in peace, man. Why do you need to do this to him, you guys? You know, not you individuals, but the ones that are, you know, oh, well, come on, man. Let it go. Let that, you know, leave that kid alone. You know, take down the awards for the guys that did what they did. You know, call them out for doing what they're doing. That's what needs to be done. Seriously. And if Vince McMahon has to go down, Stephanie has to go down, Triple H has to go down, if the WWE has to go down, and people would just listen, everybody needs to, I think, support the people that were victimized, not the stars that are still working in the company. I think all those people in the company need to walk out, and they should be ashamed that they're there. That's my personal belief. They may say, who the hell's this asshole? I don't care, man. But, I mean, seriously, like someone said, would you work in the WWE? If I didn't know what was going on, I worked there and I seen what was going on. I think I do with a lot of guys that did leave, you know, did do leave. But I wouldn't have left with my mouth closed. No signing, I wouldn't have signed anything. You'd have to kill me.
Wanted to ask you, Johnny, about and another name you mentioned, one of you know, the true standout performers who also probably doesn't get the recognition that he deserves based on you know, the run he had in WWF, and that's your team with No Gimmicks Needed, Chris Candido. As the Suicide Blondes, man, you had some really good matches against the Bad Breed, Bad Company, Dreamer and Gunn, et cetera, et cetera. What do you recall about that team and working with Chris professionally and personally?
Well, you know, I was a singles wrestler and being thrown with Chris out of nowhere. I didn't see where it was going at first, but getting to know Chris, work with Chris, and becoming a good friend with Chris, we had great times. He was like a brother at times. You know, he was a lot younger than me. You know, I had no idea he was even going to leave the Suicide Blondes. That happened without me being told, because Paulie, I believe, was in charge at that time. And I don't even know who the third Suicide Blonde dude was. No offense to him, but I don't know where he came from, how they threw that together. I wasn't in on any of that. I had no say on it. yeah, I just
was it Chris Michaels done it for a while? Was that who was in? Chris Michaels.
If that's his name, I see. Listen, I think it was maybe two matches. Well, it's hard. Two, three matches I had with, I don't know. I don't know, but I don't remember ever even knowing him. Listen, when these guys decide they're going to do something, you just listen to what they're doing, you know, go with it, whatever. I was disappointed with the Suicide Blondes, the way it ended. I wish that Chris and I could have worked a lot longer together. They were taking titles off of me, giving me different titles, this, that. You know, Todd came to me, and he started calling me Sir Johnny Hotbody, and I don't know where all this is going. I see no benefit from who's ever booking this bullshit. Eddie, you asked me about Eddie. My incidents with Eddie, when I met Eddie told me there wasn't room in the locker room for two guys with the name of Hot, and I had to change my name. And I was like, this dude's ribbing me, right? Yeah, I didn't know where that was from or where it was going, but I didn't like the way Eddie was using me. He never gave me any direction where he was going with it, except that one incident that there was only room for one hop, one guy in the locker room with the name of Hot. So they give me the Sir Jonathan Hotbody, and I believe they wanted to give me the crown of King of Philadelphia. And I wasn't having it. Todd's like, come on, man, the crown, you wear the crown. What am I, the parquet, that dude from the commercials, the parquet guy? Is it butter? Is it parquet? I'm not putting that bozo hat on. I don't like what you guys are trying to do with me, And, it was a lot. I walked from ECW when Eddie was there because there was no direction for where I was going. I wish I would have went with Chris and been there, working with him, putting over the Suicide Blondes, I don't know how far it would have gotten with us, but I seen Chris wind it up in the WWE with, wasn't it Doc Pritchard or somebody, his tag team partner or whatever, and Tammy, another piece of work, Tammy. I feel bad to this day that I introduced them two together. Seriously. Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. We had Johnny Candido on a couple of months back, and he definitely echoed those sentiments. I just had a look there, and it was Chris Michaels. I've had him on the show a couple of years back. A nice guy. He worked in the WWF under the name Bill Pierce as well. And maybe for these kind of shows, Jack, we might be able to get him on and talk about his experience then as well, in working with Johnny.
Yeah, I don't remember. Don't remember. Listen, when I tell you I've never watched the product, I never watched the product. I never watched me. I like this interview. I won't watch this. You guys, listen, we're doing it. Yeah, done. I don't want to see me. I don't think anybody else wants to see
that. Oh, you'd be surprised.
You guys keep telling me, yeah. But all right, you get 10. Listen, I heard guys say 10. If I get more than you two guys, I'd be surprised. Yeah.
Well, those that know, Johnny. And one of the questions I wanted to run by you, which kind of dovetails into what you're talking about there, is the whole concept of the Philly style of professional wrestling really came about with TWA and Eastern Championship Wrestling. And of course, you were at the heart of that, because before those companies started, Philadelphia was kind of a scorched earth territory. I know WWF used to run there and NWA at the Spectrum, but really there wasn't a distinct flavor to the product. Wanted to get your thoughts, and I've asked Joel this and several others about whether or not that Philly style and its birth in TWA and Eastern really contributed to what later went on to be the Attitude Era. And there seems to be a missing piece in the consciousness of a lot of people as to, if there wasn't a TWA, there wouldn't have been an Attitude Era. What are your thoughts on that?
I believe it to be true. I totally believe it to be true. I know you guys know this, being historians, but Vince McMahon had pretty much stopped the blood, stopped the hardcore wrestling sort of like when I was younger and watched wrestling, you had the Sheik, you had George the Animal Steel, you had the Samoans, you had the King, the Chris King Curtis, and these guys were butchers in the ring. Bruiser Brody, they were butchers. And somewhere in the 70s, I believe 77, maybe 78, I'm a kid at the time, there's X's being put on the TV anytime there's blood, and they would then go from color to black and white to hide the blood. And the more that happened, the more the authentic, the ability to believe that these guys were totally at war with each other was taken out of the picture. Tony and I doing what we did was the reopening of an old wound. We didn't care. I took out Frank Talon. I had an attitude where I was an asshole and I didn't care. I don't care what the rules are. Tony and I are going to have the match that we want to have. You know, a lot of guys wouldn't even work with me. They wouldn't even allow me to be what Tony and I were allowed to be with each other. You watch Tony's matches. Tony's had some good matches. Tony didn't have any great matches. So say. Tony and I get together. There's this magic. What did we do different? We did for each other. We didn't restrict each other from hurting each other. You know, the South Philly, we're tough guys. We're going to Epiphany School. We're fighters. We had fist fights when we were kids. We didn't pull out a gun and shoot you. We beat the shit out of you. And if we didn't beat you, we come back with our brother and we beat the shit out of you. And if we didn't beat you that way, we come back with baseball bats and we beat the shit out. Because if we didn't, our mothers, our fathers, our grandfathers, and our uncles would have beat the shit out of us. So that's the attitude. You know, I'm 61 years old, and that's the attitude. That's the era I grew up in. I may offend a lot of people, but that's the way I, you know, the child abuse. There was no such thing as a child abuse. Your kid did wrong, your kid got fucking beaten. You know what I mean? That's what made men out of us. We didn't drink soy milk. We didn't wear tight skin jeans. We didn't tie our hair in buns and shave our eyebrows. You freaking, what's wrong with you people? You know, but anyway, yeah. So, you know, for Tony and I to go into that ring and beat the shit out of each other and want to prove ourselves to our hometown and to Joel that we were worthy, that's all we did. That's nothing special, man. That's a day in the life.
You really got me with the soy milk.
Nah, don't tell me you drink it.
No, I don't know.
Don't tell me they're doing that in Ireland.
No.
You are
in. No, I'm just drinking an energy drink. So,
listen, if you could bottle my sweat, you'd have the strongest energy drink in the world.
Perfect. and for the record, the man bun has heat with me too. Guardian of Chaos, friend of the show, wants to know any thoughts on your feud with another name from this era, Tommy Cairo.
Tommy Cairo, great guy, great worker, a lot of respect for him. Hard worker. You could see just on the body of the dude. He trained for what he had, what he did. Nothing was given to him. I believe he was misused. He was held down like a lot of us. If we didn't have the appeal to kiss ass the right way and schmooze, you know, there's a lot of us guys, you won't believe us. I can't go to my own birthday party, man. I don't like crowds. I don't like people. I'd rather stay at home. You know what I mean? And I can't socialize. No, I don't want to screw your wife. No, I don't want you taking pictures of my man junk. No, I don't want to do poses in the back for anyone with a camera please leave me alone. And I'm not going to go to the bar, get drunk, and have myself wake up with a sore ass for no one. I don't kiss ass.
Well, that's what translated that. I think when you're talking about the names of which you're prominent from that era, what jumps out and what makes it appealing and why I was a fan back in the day was the realism. You were real. When you and Stetson went at it in the ring, you believed it because you were legit.
Tommy Cairo too. Tommy Cairo and I, yeah, I've received a few potatoes, and I'm sure I gave him a few potatoes. Listen, I was one of the stiffest guys out there. I really was. When it came down to it, my clotheslines were real. Larry Sharp told me you lay in a clothesline. Listen, I'm not the biggest dude. I'm a guy that's got to fight for my win. You know, and that's the way a lot of us guys were trained from the Monster Factory and from, I believe, a lot of the schools back in that time period. A lot of guys worked hard, tight, and real. Bob Holly, you know, Bob Holly, tight, real, hard. Haku, tight. You know, if he wanted to take your head off, he'd take your head off. There comes a time for the realism. When you're working in small arenas and bars and trying to make a name for yourself, that's where it gets real. And Tommy Cairo was one of those individuals, along with Glenn Osborne. You know, I don't know if you guys remember Glenn Osborne, another one misused. You understand? So many of us were misused. We weren't Paulie's guys. We were never going to be Paulie's guys. I don't know if a lot of them guys want to talk about, you know, because, hey, sometimes it's better to say nothing. You know, you're used. You get to make money in the business on the independent scenes as long as you're quiet about what really happened.
Or speak your truth. Jay's asking about Mick Foley stealing your elbow drop off the apron and never gave you credit. What's your response to that, sir?
I'm sure Barry Windham has dropped an elbow off the side. I'm sure there's a lot of guys. Listen, I didn't invent wrestling. I may have done that, yeah, and Mickey may have gotten a lot more fame out of it. God bless him. He worked for it. I worked with Mick Foley on the independent scenes. I worked with him in the AWA. We worked in New Jersey, NWA. A lot of cards with Mick Foley on them with me. And like I said, I worked with a lot of the greatest names in this sport today. I felt fortunate. I thank God. I'm not bitter, man. I'm just telling you guys the truth, and I don't even really care about stardom, whatever, man. There's somebody wanted to put me in the Hall of Fame. I'm laughing. Me in the Hall of Fame for what, man? I say thank you. I just never thought, I'd be held in any regards of anything in professional wrestling. Seriously, you know, independent scene. Who's going to get honors on the independent scenes for real? If you don't make it to the main events, who knows you? You know, I know, like you said, Jack, there's a lot of people that definitely know who Johnny Hotbody is. If they do, they must have been watching some products. Whatever, man. I thank you for watching me and remembering me and even holding an interview.
I've got two current questions to ask you, but you mentioned the Hall of Fame, but I wanted to ask you about this. As you're likely aware, Chubby Dudley Bay is starting a petition online called, I've got the hashtag here, Raise the Banner, to have a number of Philly icon names on a banner hanging from that 2300 ECW arena, names including yourself, Tony Stetson, Joel Goodhart, Larry Winters, the late Larry Winters, and DC Drake, who we've also had the pleasure of interviewing here. Fans that are interested can go to, and we'll put this in the description, can go to change.org to sign that petition. I certainly have. What would this, I know it's not a Hall of Fame, but what would that mean to you to be up there with those luminaries?
Well, in some strange way, as little as it may, listen, it's not the WWF's thing or whatever, but guess what? It means that much to me. I'm the one that found that arena. Pow. Blood, Sweat, and Tears organization built off of what Joel Goodhart wanted. And I believe ECW, Extreme Championship Wrestling and Eastern Championship Wrestling, it's Joel that deserves more than anything. It was his dream, his concept. It's what he wanted. I believe he should, all of us need to have our own individual banner, because that's the way it is in that arena. Everyone has their own individual banner. His banner should be in gold.
Absolutely. Morris, do you have another question before I get to my final one for Johnny? Because I see we've, as I predicted, ripped through the hour.
Burned through the time. Johnny, I was just wondering, do you have any memories of working with Jimmy Snuka and what he was like inside and outside the ring?
Hell of a pot smoker.
Always a good thing.
Jimmy was a great guy to me. I never got to see any other side of him but a good side. I know the stories out there, and I don't mean to. I know a lot of people don't like him, and have, you know, if you say anything nice about him, you probably are like looked at strangely for what he's, you know, what he's responsible for. He's responsible for that, as well as Pat Patterson's responsible for the train wreck of victims that he's left behind. You know, my dealings with Jimmy, of course, were not on that level. Jimmy was beautiful to me. He gave me a dream match that I never even thought would be possible, because, like, Jimmy Snuka was my favorite wrestler as a kid. Him and Superstar Billy Graham. Superstar Billy Graham first and always first. But Jimmy Snuka, you know, a great guy, talented. And when he came to ECW, listen, I'm going to be real with you. He's a great guy, but here's the deal. When he came in the door and he came to work, he came to get paid and smoke pot. He didn't come to work. Yeah, my match with him was so easy. I didn't even know I was in the ring with anyone.
Not a bad deal if you can get it. Come into work, yes, and get paid and smoke pot, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Johnny, again, we're almost out of time, but I have two more questions for you. I'll hit you with the first one being, out of all the accomplishments in your career or aspects of your career that you would be most proud of on a personal level, I know that's a difficult thing to delineate down, but what would you say that would be for your most proud accomplishment?
As far as the business goes, I guess escaping it unscathed with my pride and a reputation as a stand-up man who didn't take shit, laid down for fame, and did what I had to do to, you know, my family first, my life first, you know, more importantly than, you know, the business.
Excellent. Now, my final question is, one surrounding TWA. As I keep mentioning, I recently interviewed Joel Goodhart, and he hinted at the fact that there may very well be in the offing a TWA reunion show, of which Great North Wrestling would be very pleased to be a part of. But the question is, would you be interested in participating in that in some way, shape, or form?
I would love to. Here's the truth of the matter. I would love to do it. I would be there. And I will be there if that's what it is, as far as that being the extent of the participation. Physically, triple bypass surgery, CPOD? I have an oxygen machine. My heart's regulated at below, it's like 50 to 45 beats. I'm allowed anything more than that. I'm in bad shape, guys. You know, steroids and abuse on my body. My heart's just not able to hit the ring. And, you know, not unless it was going to be something like what Mickey Rourke did. I'd climb to the top rope, come off, and it'd be the end of the movie. You know, I'm not looking for that. I got granddaughters, and, I would be there. I would love to see the people if they'd even want to see me. You know, it'd be great as far as that end of the participation, signing autographs, reliving stories, hugging guys like Tommy Dreamer, hugging Joel Goodhart, spending time with him, spending times with guys like Stevie Wonderful, Jay Sully, Bob Ortiz, Lex Ortiz, the behind-the-scene people, Tony Stetson. I miss him so much. The last time I seen him, he was at the hospital when I was getting cracked open for my triple bypass. See, that's how much love Tony and I have. He's the only professional wrestler that showed up for my surgery. I was dead for 3 days. Was dead out for 2 weeks. The recovery was bad with the anesthesia. Oh man, yeah. I can't get excited. I can't hit the ropes, man. I'm sorry. There won't be no chair shots.
Here's what's been suggested, and I believe Tony floated this as well, and the booker in me is quite excited about the possibility. How about a Hot Body versus Stetson encounter, perhaps for the last time, where you have a wrestler that is representing you in the ring, and the Hitman has one, and it's another chapter, perhaps the final chapter in such a storied rivalry. How does that sound?
That sounds awesome. That sounds like something I'd be definitely down with. You know, I don't know who's wrestling nowadays, seriously, other than what I see on the W, whatever the letter is today.
I'm sure there'd be plenty of people that would line up to wrestle for you.
Oh, well, I would love to live to see the day of that. It would definitely. I'd break down in tears, fellas. You could get a picture of that.
Well, Johnny, we will definitely stay in touch. I'm in touch with Joel, and we'll keep you in the loop on that. But I want to really thank you for your time tonight, your sincerity, and what you contributed to the business that a lot of fans, old school fans such as myself, still remember and appreciate.
I appreciate that, hearing that, and thank you so much. Seriously, thank you for even doing this interview and giving me the time.
I really enjoyed the passion. And I really, like, there was a few times you got me and I was just laughing with the stuff you said.
Hey,
and listen, I know it's serious stuff, but the one-liners that were in there, I just couldn't hold it in.
Listen, there's a lot still left in Johnny, you know. I don't know how many people really want to meet Johnny Hotbody. I don't want to meet him. I didn't like him. And I'm glad that I separated myself from that. You know, definitely.
I see a potential pro wrestling tees store with your name on it. And the first shirt would be Man Bun Heat. I like it. That's the creative item. <right?
laughs> go for it. Oh, that's great. That is awesome.
Stay tuned for that. We have lots of good stuff potentially coming forward. But that's it, fans, for this epic edition of the Cheap Heat Productions Pro Wrestling Podcast with Johnny Hotbody for Morris. I'm Jack Kilby, and we will see you next time.
Thank you, Morris. Thank you, Jack.